The clock is ticking down to enforcement of SB4, the so-called Sanctuary Cities Law. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio, and this is Fronteras, a public radio show about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. Senate Bill 4, which critics call the Show Me Your Papers law, will take effect September 1st. The new Texas law gives police officers the right to ask about a person's immigration status. KUT's Audrey McGlinchey looks at how one Austin nonprofit is preparing immigrants to respond if stopped.
Sometimes Candelario Vasquez's audience gets testy.
Muy buenos días, compañeros. Yo soy Candelario. ¿Cómo están todos?
Vasquez intros himself to a crowd of about 20 people. Adults and kids sit in hard plastic chairs at the Mexican consulate in downtown Austin. Like a visit to the DMV, they're waiting to be called. It's an audience ripe for interaction.
Viene una nueva ley, SB4. ¿Quién ha escuchado de esa ley, SB4?
Who's heard of SB4, S. Vasquez? More than half of the hands in the room go up. Vasquez works for the Workers' Defense Project. It's an immigrants' rights group. He's here to teach people about their rights. First, the ability to stay silent. Vasquez unravels a red poster.
So they say, I choose to be silent.
On the poster, he's drawn an eyeball, shoes, the number 2, a bumblebee, and the word silent. Visuals.
Es como, I choose, con mis zapatos, to be, como una abeja, avispa, silent.
But if you can't find the words, he says, hand the officer a wallet-sized piece of paper.
Preséntales una tarjeta donde dice, yo escojo ejercer mi derecho de mantenerme en silencio.
The card says, I invoke my Fifth Amendment rights. Vasquez hands them out. People take multiple copies. A man who'd been speaking with an attendant at one of the counters taps Vasquez on the arm, asking for a card. Then it's time for Vasquez to wrap it up. I mean, audience members can be called away at any moment. He closes with a role play.
Un voluntario. Ah, señora, muy bien, un aplauso.
A woman volunteers. She's Rosa Alvarez. Vasquez puts on a navy cap. It reads Special Police across the front. He sets the scene. Alvarez is walking down 6th Street after going shopping.
Excuse me, señora. ¿Usted qué está haciendo en esta carretera?
What are you doing on this street? Alvarez fumbles. A man cues her.
I choose to be silent.
Vasquez, as the cop, asks to see her ID.
¿Tienes un ID?
Alvarez hands him the card saying she'll be invoking her Fifth Amendment rights. Officer Vasquez, oh, you don't want to talk to me anymore? Go on, then. Audience members, none of whom signed up for this, applaud.
Okay, un aplauso. Hizo muy bien. So I choose to be silent.
Vasquez will be back next week. For Fronteras, I'm Audrey McGlinchey.
DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, is an Obama-era immigration policy that defers deportation for 2 years to minors who entered the country illegally. In a high-profile case in San Diego, a federal judge is urging a quick trial for Juan Manuel Montes, a young Mexican who had DACA deferment but was deported from the U.S. in February. Jean Guerrero of KPBS has details.
Juan Manuel Montes is the first known person to be deported from the U.S. in spite of an act of DACA status. President Trump has expressed conflicting views on DACA, but in the past has threatened to end the program. Montes' attorney, Nora Preciado, says he was unlawfully deported. She asked the judge to let Montes return to the U.S. immediately. Montes had lived in the U.S. since he was 9 years old and has a learning disability.
Every minute that he spends away from home is harming him and his entire family, so we look forward to him being home soon.
For now, the judge declined to rule on whether Montes should return. He says the case deserves a trial. The parties will reconvene after discussing how long they'll need to prepare for the trial. Then the judge will reevaluate if Montes should be paroled back into the U.S. for the trial.
That's Jean Guerrero reporting. As universities and colleges welcome students for the fall semester, many undocumented students may want to attend. Some of them could fall under the provisions of DACA. Are undocumented students eligible to attend public colleges and universities here in Texas? Are there special admission requirements? I got answers from two representatives from the University of Texas at San Antonio, Maricela Oliva, associate professor with the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Studies, and Christopher Goldsberry, senior undergraduate admissions counselor. What is UTSA's admissions policy regarding undocumented students?
UTSA's admissions policy for undocumented students is the same for any other domestic student that would like to apply. We treat them exactly the same. They are put through the same rigorous admissions process as any other students. So when we're actually looking at a student for just admissions purposes, we're not looking at the fact that they are undocumented.
But there is some sort of requirement that they have to meet. I understand that undocumented students or DACA students, they do have to have some sort of a proof of residency.
Yes, that is correct. Students do have to answer residency questions on the application for admission. So that's how when we actually have gone through the admissions process that we do determine based on what they state on their residency questions on admissions, if they are a domestic student, if they're undocumented, or if they are actually an international student.
Now, is this admission policy unique to UTSA, or is this something that applies to all UT schools in the system?
The way we treat students in terms of allowing them admissions is partly connected to state policy that we want more and more students to have a post-secondary education because it benefits us economically and socially. The provisions that we have in place to allow students the same kinds of access as in-state students are part of a statutory House Bill 1403 that was passed in 2001 because of the argument that we want more students to be educated than not. It's an economic argument. It's not the moral argument that we sometimes make, but the reality is that a young person who's not educated and has limited education is more likely to be a drain on the system, and that's true of anyone, than kind of an economic engine to help power the economic benefits that the state requires.
Now, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA, that's sort of been in limbo lately with the current administration. Have you noticed any change in the number of DACA students who are applying to UTSA? Because I know you've just started a semester. You started the fall semester at UTSA. Has there been any change in the number of students you've seen?
Well, I don't know that we would know if there's a change in numbers, because DACA is actually a federal process. It's not a process that UTSA is involved in. I can say that before DACA was in place, I did hear from students who were concerned about their inability to work, their inability to essentially come out of the shadows in terms of their status because of a fear about becoming known as someone with undocumented status. In many cases, these young people didn't even know themselves until they hit some adolescent milestones that they weren't citizens of the U.S. So we're hearing some of the same reservations now. And even though I have not heard from students at UTSA, the policy bodies across the country are actually saying if you haven't already applied for DACA, it might not be in your interest to apply now because we don't know if that's going to exist in the future. And by applying, you essentially reveal your status.
So there might not be a lot of undocumented students out there who may know that they would pay in-state tuition if they were accepted to UTSA. So how do you reach out to them to let them know about the benefits of attending a public university and the fact that they can actually attend without any fear of being deported or without any fear of having to pay any extra costs such as an out-of-state student would?
Many of them are willing to talk to us and are willing to reveal that status. And so it allows us to really help that student understand, okay, this is what House Bill 1403 is. Do you realize that you may be eligible for in-state tuition? That means that your college's experience is going to be quite a lot cheaper than if you were to pay out-of-state residency. I don't know that it's been a major issue for us to actually try to have to pull that information from the student because most of them are rather forthcoming when it comes to just admissions. When it comes to financial aid, because the students who are undocumented, their financial aid opportunities are much more limited than, per se, a domestic U.S. citizen or permanent resident's financial aid opportunities might be. In-state residency is equally just very important to these students so that they can help to be able to afford their college experience.
So are undocumented students, just because of their status, ineligible for federal financial aid.
That's correct. Undocumented students are not eligible for federal aid, but they are eligible for state aid if they are eligible for House Bill 1403.
What about scholarships? Are there some scholarships that are available to undocumented students that they could take advantage of, academic or otherwise?
Most of our students are going to be eligible if they are eligible for House Bill 1403. We would encourage them to apply for financial aid like any other student, with the exception that they don't use the same form that a domestic U.S. citizen or permanent resident would be. We would ask them at UTSA, we ask them to utilize the TASFA, which is the Texas Application for State Financial Aid. Many schools across the state utilize that form. It can be found on the College for All Texans website. We do consider them for a couple of grants. We consider their eligibility for Texas Excellence Grant, for Texas Public Education Grant. And then some schools may have scholarships that they individually consider students for. For example, at UTSA, they may be considered for our Distinguished Scholar Program because we do consider all students for that if they meet the criteria. And then we always encourage these students to look for outside scholarships. There's just not a lot of aid for them at the school level because of their undocumented status.
One of the findings that we had from the conversations we had locally in the community about undocumented students in the community and how we might do a better job of serving them was that, in fact, very often educators at both the K-12 and higher ed level really weren't as informed as we could be about how the status really changed things like eligibility for certain parts of financial aid or whether they were safe to reveal themselves. Early on, students were very reluctant to essentially reveal themselves to educators, so very often educators weren't aware that this student, who in many other respects looks like other students in the school or in a college, and by that I mean they might be first generation, they might be low income. So as things started to change from a policy perspective and DACA came on board, then students felt like a little bit more comfortable sharing their status because they saw that there was now a kind of a policy implication to doing things with DACA. In the current environment, we may see things going back to where they were before, where students are less willing or more reluctant, let's say, to kind of reveal their status to a K-12 educator, to a post-secondary outreach person, and that might get in the way of students actually taking the step of going to college.
So is there anything at UTSA, any department, organization that essentially reaches out and is sort of a support group for some of these undocumented students who might have that uncertainty?
Students on campus organize themselves as supports for each other and in that circumstance. There was also an organization within the community. They were kind of students in college across the community who met because they were finding that, at least in the early period, they sometimes were getting inaccurate information, again, because the average educator may not be as well versed in this particular aspect of policy. And so the San Antonio Immigrant Youth Movement got together and created their own kind of booklet with information about who to talk to at the different campuses and would provide quality information.
I am aware of the San Antonio Immigration Youth Movement and of their work. I, on a daily basis, work with undocumented students, so that's not uncommon that I have worked with some students from that organization. We are very welcoming at UTSA for our undocumented population. Would hope that we can help them in any way possible to actually achieve their educational goals.
That was my conversation with Christopher Goldsberry and Maricela Oliva from the University of Texas at San Antonio. Coming up on Fronteras, forgiving Mexico's colonial past.
She says in Spanish, the original people of this area are like pieces of a puzzle.
That story after this. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio, and this is Fronteras. Worrying about a family's immigration status can put a tremendous amount of stress on children. A new study shows there's a group of young people whose levels of anxiety are so high they can only be compared to those of soldiers who've experienced trauma. KUT's Joy Diaz explains.
Who are these children and why are they so anxious?
Since I was little, I always had anxiety when it came to my parents not coming home at a certain time.
They're kids, like Silvia Zubieta Rodriguez. She's now 18, but her anxiety goes way back.
I was like 6 years old when I knew about immigration and deportation and the possibility of them being deported back to Mexico. And I suffered extreme anxiety because of it when I was younger, but it wasn't to the degree of panic attacks, but it was to the degree of calling them every couple of hours before they got home, making sure that they were on their way.
What started with the terrifying possibility that her parents could be deported climaxed with her dad's actual deportation 4 years ago. Zubieta Rodriguez was 14. That week, she attempted suicide. Deportations today are up from years ago. Data from the Department of Homeland Security says deportations have risen by almost 38% from 2016. This ramping up often translates in elevated levels of stress and anxiety in thousands of Texas children. Rice University researcher Luz Garcini just released a study featured in the American Journal of Psychiatry looking precisely at that.
We found out that overall, the population has a high level of distress. Major depressive disorders turn out to be primarily prevalent, but also the anxiety disorders.
One disorder Garcini couldn't find among this group was PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder. She was puzzled, but not surprised.
A lot of the criteria that we develop for PTSD is based on a Western kind of Anglo culture of military personnel that was sent overseas and developed trauma symptoms.
Meaning previous studies have been tailor-made for soldiers, not for children who live in fear of losing a parent or in fear of they themselves being deported. Garcini says, even so, when it comes to PTSD symptoms, these kids fit every criteria except one.
To experience limited functional ability. And what happens with these immigrants is they will meet criteria for the other symptoms, but they have no limited functional ability because they cannot afford that luxury.
For instance, Silvia Zubieta Rodriguez is still in school and holding a job. She cannot afford to be limited by her mental health.
I am saving up money so that my mom doesn't have to buy the necessities that I need to and for college and stuff, as well as like my dad needs the money, like $500 a month or something like that.
Imagine hauling that level of stress into a classroom, whether the classroom is at an elementary school or at a college campus. Michael Williams has been thinking about that. He's the former commissioner of the Texas Education Agency.
Think about the adverse learning impacts on the student who leaves that classroom and even on the child who's left behind, who's going to be worried that their best friend is now gone, who's going to be worried perhaps that somebody may come to get them next. The adverse academic educational consequences are significant.
They are significant, but unknown. Up until now, there's been very little quantitative data in that regard, and that's what Rice researcher Luz Garcini is working on next.
For Fronteras, I'm Joy Diaz.
A federal judge this week ruled the Arizona law banning ethnic studies violated students' constitutional rights. His ruling made clear the state showed discriminatory intent when it shut down a Mexican-American studies program in Tucson public schools. In the Sierra Madres, Apache men, women, and children from both sides of our southern border recently joined other First Nations of Mexico for a ceremony dedicated to forgiving the country's colonial past. Marfa Public Radio's Jessica Lutz takes us there.
La Ceremonia del Perdón, or Forgiveness Ceremony, a gesture of forgiveness for colonial crimes against the Apache and other tribes across the Americas, was the vision of Bernarda Holguín. And it was her vision, literally her eyesight, she lost while exploring her family's ancestry.
Con esa búsqueda de descubrir cuál era nuestra verdadera genealogía familiar o cuál era ese secreto que estaba afectándonos.
She said she asked God for help to restore her sight and her family's true identity.
Y que me regresara la vista.
People came to the mountains of the Sierra Madres to reconnect with their ancestry and weave the threads of their heritage through dance, song, and prayer in languages colonial society wanted them to forget.
Agua en buenas tú, tú o cu.
Ivan Alexander de Leon, Coahuila State Representative for the Lipan Apache Band, speaks his native tongue fluently, transitioning between and sharing languages as he speaks.
El aire, hi.
Almost the entire event was translated into the Tarahumara language. The Tarahumara, who are famously known for their long-distance endurance running, are natives of the state of Chihuahua. They retreated to the high sierras of Copper Canyon and the Sierra Madre, fleeing Spanish invaders during the 16th century, a flight that has enabled them to maintain their cultural heritage. Under a canopy of pine trees and with rolling thunder, the crown dancers from the White Mountain Reservation in Arizona danced and sang prayers. Kiriaki Orfanel Espino, an anthropologist in Huachochi dedicated to preserving the rights of original people, explains that each pueblo and each tribe has a distinct culture, language, and manner of living, and is offended by the term indigenous as it generalizes distinct peoples.
Esa parte me gusta mucho pensarla.
She is inspired about this gathering and what it means for original people everywhere as they gather to share their secrets, their culture. She says, in Spanish, the original people of this area are like pieces of a puzzle
de un rompecabezas,
and are now coming together, including the mestizo, people with mixed heritage, as one. In the Sierra Madre Mountains in Chihuahua, I'm Jessica Lutz.
And that's it for Fronteras and our stories from the Southwest this week. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org. Alexis Yancey produced this broadcast. Michelle Dubach is our executive producer. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Thanks for joining us. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.